Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay.
Girl, I got to say thank you so much for doing this interview with me.
Thank you.
Big fan of yours.
Thank you.
I think you and I grew up about the same way, too. I mean, love of music and definitely love of your music. But most importantly, just loving all the things that you've done and conquered, because you're truly an inspiration for so many people. So, again, thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you for such a nice compliment.
Oh, no, no problem. You know, people have you know, you've always had the title Queen of Disco. When you think about it now, I mean, do you like having that title? Is it something that you've embraced, you know, over the years?
Well, my theory about all of it is it's nice to be the queen of something. You know?
I want to go back to the days when you grew up in Boston. You grew up in the church. You loved loved gospel.
Uh-huh.
How did things change for you? Because from gospel, you kind of went into sort of like rock music, if I'm correct,
yes,
right?
I went into rock and roll. Yeah, I joined a rock and roll band and had, you know, a very exciting time with the band, and really, I would say that my initial entree, public entree, was gospel music. But by the time I was about, I'd say 14, 15, 16 in there, I started, you know, actually imitating Elvis Presley. Yeah, And then I got a job by the time I was 18 with this band called The Crow, and from that point on I was singing rock and roll music, and then it went from that to, you know, I mean, I sang some R&B in there too. So basically I grew up kind of singing everything, and when I was in my early teens, I was doing you know, Brooke Benton and Dinah Washington. So my musical heritage is really diverse, and I grew up just singing everything.
But did you ever think that you would wind up in Germany, of all places, of course, being part of the production of Hair?
I did, because my dad had been a translating sergeant in the service, and I had heard German spoken in my mother's house all the time. My parents spoke German. My mother didn't speak it that well, but he taught her words that he could speak to her back in, and they spoke to, so that they wouldn't let us know what was going on. And so I did kind of have an inclination that Germany would be a destination for me at some point in my life.
But you, of course, always wanted to be a solo artist, and it was around when? I think 1971 when you really started to approach that, correct? Because you started working with, what is the producer?
Joe Marotta?
Yes.
Pete Bellotti?
Yes.
Yeah, I started, I was in Germany, and I was sort of, had gotten out of the last musical that I was in, and I had just had my daughter, Mimi, and I was bored out of my mind. And I thought, I got to do something. And Giorgio called me and wanted me to do some demos. And that's how I met Giorgio. And after that, I had an idea for a song that sort of popped into my head. I wrote the title down. And the next time I went in to do a session for him, I told him about this idea, which he absolutely loved. And so he went in the studio and, unbeknownst to me, began to write a track for me to sing to, which was later became Love to Love You, Baby. A couple of days later, his girlfriend is knocking on the door telling me I had to run to the studio, and whammo, I recorded Love to Love You, and that's the beginning of my life with Giorgio.
Incredible, incredible. Of course, incredible song, too. I mean, it was huge in Europe. Came down to, of course, to the States and in Canada, and just exploded down here, too. But what's so interesting about with this song, as well as you of course, know, was people love the song so much that a short version wasn't enough. So, of course, you guys came up with something which really revolutionized music. You came out with a long version that DJs loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, because DJs could put it on. I mean, it wasn't really the kind of song you probably would play around children necessarily, but it was a song that could be played late at night or when they wanted to take a break and there was constant music on and without changing. And so the DJs just loved the record, and they would put it on at nighttime, which was probably the appropriate time for it to be on anyway. And they sometimes would even play it back-to-back, so it would be 30, 40 minutes of Love to Love You, Baby on some radio stations, and people would turn it on and just, you know, do whatever. Who knows what they were doing?
Oh, exactly. Trust me, girl. You are probably credited for helping make a lot of babies right now.
Yeah, okay? Constantly. But people come up to me all the time and say, you know, that song, my oldest son or my oldest daughter, they're now X amount of years old, and, you know, thank you.
But you guys also did something, too, because even though the form of disco was coming up, when we think about it now, you guys also helped bring in that form of techno music, too.
Yeah, well, I think Giorgio was, first of all, Giorgio's Italian, and he is has an incredible sense of music and musicality, much more than people would ever know him for, because he tries to write commercial music, but the stuff that he writes is so symphonic, his other stuff, that people don't even hear. And he wanted to incorporate that feel with some new technologies. And he brought that new technology to his music, and we just began experimenting with sounds, and he came up with that whole sort of techno thing that worked very well for me in the beginning.
When you first started hearing people calling you the Disco Queen, what were your thoughts on this? Was like, disco? What are you talking about?
Funny.
Really?
Well, the word disco for me was a common word. In Germany and Europe, a disco was just a place to go dance, where they played music, meaning a disc, for entertainment. So that's what a disco was. But I don't know if that word was used as frequently or as much in the United States. It was a much bigger, maybe probably even a French word, to tell you the truth.
But one of my favorite albums, of course, is The Four Seasons of Love.
Uh-huh.
Again, a unique album because long songs, not many tracks, but something that, you know, filled up the dance floors.
Uh-huh.
What were your thoughts on being part of something like this that you guys were creating? Because, again, it wasn't so much about it was such a mix of lyrics, beats, but also presentation that I think was missing from music back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for us, and I tend to do this even no matter what's going on, I'm a conceptual thinker. You know, I like to have a middle, and an end. And I think Giorgio and I have that in common. And I think that there was something about creating something that once you start, it takes you through movements like classical music does, and then brings you. And I think that had to do a lot with Giorgio's classical background as well, and my theatrical background in creating something where people stepped onto an element in one sound of music, and then it carried them through that. To you know, through a journey and drop them off somewhere else, and we felt that was unique, and that was a good, not unique in the overall spectrum of music, but unique in pop music.
Well, you know, you always seem to somehow top yourself, and I don't know, getting a Grammy Award is one thing, but being part of an Oscar winning song is something else. And we're talking about Last Dance. Congratulations for all that. What was that like for you being part of the movie, Thank God It's Friday, and of course realizing your song, Last Dance, not only being so big, but, I mean, again, Grammy, Oscar, wow.
Well, you know, Paul Jabara called me. He came down. I was in Puerto Rico, and he came down, and he asked me to do the song. He actually locked me in a bathroom and sang it to me about I don't know how many times. And finally, you know, I had consented to do it after the first time, but it wasn't enough for him. He had to keep singing it to me, trying to convince me, and I kept going, I'm going to do the song, get out of my bathroom. And so immediately when I left Puerto Rico, I flew back to L.A., and we went into the studio, and we recorded the song, and I'll never forget it because we were there and, you know, late at night. We finished the final take. They gave me a kind of preliminary mix. I went up to, I don't know if you're familiar with California, but I went up to, in Los Angeles, there's a street called Mulholland. It's very windy, and it's very dangerous. I went in, I got in my car, drove up to the top of the street, where at that time were not that many houses, and I played Last Dance at just as loud as I could and drove up and down the canyon singing it. And then I stopped in one overlooked place to see the city and played it real, real, real loud. And I just thought, my gosh, this is a big hit. This is such a big hit. And then after I got done, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I drove just as the sun was coming up down to Paul Jabara's house, and I still had it on, and people were coming out of their houses, and Paul ran out and he gave me a hug, and we started dancing in front of the house. It was just one of those moments.
Do you know what's going on with Paul? Because I mean, from the album, I always loved "Trapped in the Stairway." One of my favorite all-time uh-huh. songs, too. And, of course, for people who may have seen the movie also, who should have seen the movie, he's in the film, too. He's
yeah,
the guy
exactly.
who's trapped in the stairway.
Paul passed away it's got to be at least 10, maybe 12, oh, longer than that, maybe 15 years ago.
Peace.
I'm sorry to say that.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? Great songwriter, great producer.
Yeah, he's an excellent songwriter. He also wrote Enough is Enough with, I think it was, I forget, he wrote it with Bruce Roberts or something like that.
And that's something else, too, because you were one of the few acts, if we want to call that the disco era, that got out of that and still maintained an audience when we went into the 80s.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let's face it. When you're working with people like Barbara Streisand, that says something. When you're working with people like Quincy Jones, that said something, too. But when you're writing music and putting out music that is considered an anthem, she works hard for the money, I think that says it all.
Well, I'm really blessed in that I think that at an early point in my career, I insisted that I be part of, you know, what the music was, that they not just, I mean, I didn't mind doing songs that other people also wrote for me that were great, but I wanted to be part of my own music, and I think that made a difference in my, you know, in people's perception of me, that I wasn't just a singer, that I was also a singer-songwriter, and that I was actually, you know, part of the music that I was making, so they could listen and feel that I was actually emotionally connected to what I was writing. And when I wrote Hard for the Money, that was a direct, immediate story that had happened to me right at a Grammy party, actually, and it was a true story. So it was a fun thing to write, and it was a real anthem to the working person.
But did you ever feel, as you got older, there was a conflict between the image of Donna Summers, disco queen, to the Donna Summers that we don't usually get a chance to see?
You know, I don't think that there was so much of a conflict between, not between my person. In other words, I've become very true to myself on stage, and I try not to do things that I can't really represent. You know what I mean? I mean, once in a while there's a minor conflict, but I don't really have that problem anymore. I think back in the early days, I didn't really want to be that sexy person. I mean, everybody's got some amount of sex appeal. I didn't mind being attractive, but I just didn't like that being, you know, here comes this person who's, you know, all this oozing sex. I mean, it just didn't, I mean, would you want to be known? Well, you're a guy, sure. But, I mean, I think it connotated that I was not intelligent. And after having lived in Germany, speaking other languages and different things, I just felt that that was not something I wanted to be pinned to the rest of my life.
But what was also cool, though, is you're going back and forth sort of with the acting Family Matters. You were on that a couple of times.
Yeah, I did. I did do that. That actually came about because a friend of mine did the show, and I used to imitate Urkel all the time. And he said, hey, I'm going to write you into the show. And so I told him I would do it. I actually kind of decided I wasn't going to act while my kids were young, and because I just felt that there was too much of a time conflict. So that was something that I was able to do without it taxing my family time too much.
If you could go back to that young girl in Boston who was joining those rock bands, who was doing the Elvis impersonations, who was getting ready to head to Germany, what would you say to her now?
Well, I'd say, hey, you came a long way, girl. But you still got further to go.
And that's the great thing, too, because you're back to doing gospel and other things, too, correct?
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying to you before, I do music. I sing whatever is relevant in the moment, you know, so I sing at church sometimes. It's all part of music. I don't eliminate one from the other. If I go to a rock concert, I probably know most of the words, you know. I like music, period, and I do listen to everything. It's just part of the human experience, so I enjoy whatever it is. You know, every type of music may not be my absolute favorite music, but it's all relevant. And so I have to be occupied with what that is.
With the artists who are out today, what do you think of most of the young divas, if you want to call them that, now? And two, are there any of them that you would love to, like, call up and say, hey, let's work together?
Well, I'm sure I'd like to work with any of them. You know, they're all, you know, very, very gifted. They're very talented. They've taken a lot of the vocal music to another place. You know, now it's more about singing licks. It's not so much about the melody. as such as when we grew up, it was more about singing long notes and melody, but now it's more, you know, everything's a little more staccato and, you know, more, you know, just singing more licks. I just think that the girls are doing great. I don't have anything to add. I think they've taken whatever we've done and they've taken it to the next level. I'm proud of them. I think they've done an incredible job. They're doing an incredible job. And, you know, I'm amazed at what this generation has gleaned from the prior generations and where they're taking it. And so I'm looking at them trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. I'm learning now from them.
Well, I know one of the next things you're going to be doing is you're going to be playing at Casino Rama. What can we expect at the big show?
Well, you know, this tour I look at as being a reconnecting tour to my public and to just, you know, having some kind of relationship and bonding with the audience again, because I've been away for a while. And I felt like I didn't want to have, you know, a lot of stuff going on, too much stuff. I mean, there's some things going on, but I didn't want to have a whole lot of stuff going on. I didn't want to separate myself that much from the audience. So I've really dedicated myself to being physically in touch with the audience. Let's put it like that. It's going to be a very intimate kind of show, even though I will do all my hits and all the things they probably expect me to do, I will do them. But I think I spend a little more time with them.
Now, before we wrap this up, I've got to ask you this question because people are going to kill me if I don't. I know most of the women will, too. How do you do this, staying and looking so young? What do you do?
What do I do?
What's the secret?
I try to live right. That's first of all. I pray a lot. I use good makeup. And I really try to get a lot of sleep. I try to take vitamins and take care of myself. You know, I'm a grandmother at this point, and I don't spaz out about, you know, if I gain a pound or two here or there. I don't spaz out about that. I think it's normal. I try to live more in the normal reality of aging. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to running to the doctor if I see a wrinkle and going, oh, God, you got to get rid of that. Stick me full of some collagen. I don't use all that stuff. Maybe I will one day when I feel desperate. I don't know if I should feel desperate, but I just think it's part of life. I mean, I'm just me now. That's all I can say. I'm not trying to be 22 years old anymore. I'm not. And that's how I live it, and I accept who I am.
You are as gorgeous today as you were when I first picked up your album. So
thank you.
How do you want people to remember your career?
Well, I hope that in the future when I have even different songs out and I go through some other musical motions, that they will feel that I gave them everything. I gave them what was in me, and that there were places where myself and the audience could really connect, and that there's a loving bond between us. And that's what I would like them to remember, that I love them, and that there's that kind of connectiveness to me.
Well, I am so glad that you are still on tour. I'm really hoping another album is coming our way. And also, please, stick with the acting, too. I loved you in Family Matters.
Okay.
Keep doing the acting, too.
Thank you. Okay, I'll try to do that.
I am bowing to you. Thank you so much for
your
time. Take care.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye, Rudy.
Bye-bye.